As violent crime continues to rise in Canada's major cities, the many failures of Canada's justice system have come into sharper focus for Canadians over the past few years. What is described as Canada's revolving door bail policy, where repeat violent offenders are released back out onto the streets after committing crimes, only to continue committing more violent crimes, has rightfully occupied the attention of a large number of Canadians who just want to live in a normal and safe country. But what about the other side of Canada's justice system? The Canadian justice system has a bad history with wrongfully convicting innocent people for crimes they haven't actually committed. Not only does this strip innocent Canadians of their rights and freedoms, but it allows the actual perpetrators of these crimes to get away and walk free. If you've been paying close attention to the news over the past few weeks, you may have come across the story of Robert Mailman and Walter Gillespie, two innocent men who had their lives taken away from them by the Canadian justice system and convicted of a murder, which it turns out they never actually committed. Well, joining us now is Ron Dalton, the co-president of Innocence Canada, a nonprofit legal organization working to help identify and exonerate individuals who have been convicted of crimes that they did not commit. Ron himself spent close to 8 years in prison for a crime that he didn't commit, and we're going to get into his story later on in the interview. But I want to begin, Ron, with the story of Robert Mailman and Walter Gillespie. These men were given life sentences for the 1983 murder of George Lehman in New Brunswick. They spent 18 and 21 years of their lives, respectively, in jail. And just a few weeks ago, these men were finally exonerated after 40 years with the help of your group, Innocence Canada. Ron, can you take us through the story of this case and how something like this is even possible?
Well, Harrison, I wish it wasn't possible, but it's all too possible. We had Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie acquitted of crimes, 40-year-old homicides, in early January. In July past, we had Brian Anderson and A.J. Woodhouse in Winnipeg exonerated and declared innocent after 50 years plus a day. Those four gentlemen is 180 years between them. And that's almost all you need to know, is that we get it wrong. We get it wrong a lot more often than we thought we ever would. And it's almost impossible. And I say almost because thanks to the good work of Innocence Canada and some other volunteer organizations, we managed to get some of them straightened away, although it's very, very long period of time. And literally, in Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie's case, it's taken half of their lives.
In this retrial that happened in the beginning of January, there wasn't any actual evidence presented from the prosecution. So it appears that all the evidence brought forward against them originally wasn't sound, it wasn't strong, but yet it was taken, their lives were taken away from them. Is there any accountability that's going to be faced by the New Brunswick, the St. John police and the Crown prosecution? Or is this just going to keep happening to Canadians and no one's going to be held accountable?
I'm afraid it would be a very exceptional case if there was any real accountability. This case against Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie was weak to start with. Their first trials back in 1985 ended in hung juries. They were retried a couple months later and then convicted. And for 40 years, they've maintained their innocence when it would have been much easier to go along and say, yes, we did this. They would have been out of prison much earlier. In Mr. Gillespie's case, the day after he was arrested, they offered him the opportunity to plead guilty to being an accessory. They were recommending a 2 to 3 year sentence. He didn't have to spend 40 years in prison. The man looked at them and said, I can't say I saw something I didn't see, and I can't say I heard something I didn't hear. And for 40 years, he's maintained his innocence. And that's one of the themes that we do see in the work that Innocence Canada does. When people will stand by their innocence for that long, when it would have been easier and more to their advantage sometimes to admit to something that they hadn't done. It's very much a red flag for us. It makes us dig in a lot deeper. But as you said, by the time we got to in front of the Chief Justice on the 4th of January, earlier this month, there was no evidence left. There was never much to start with. And in order to get the Federal Justice Minister to overturn their convictions, we had to convince the minister that the convictions were unsound, that there was a likelihood of a miscarriage of justice. And that meant knocking the underpinnings out from what little evidence there was. So that by the time we called the case into court on the 4th of of January, we had two murder trials in a half-hour period. The case was called, the gentleman entered not guilty pleas, the Crown admitted they had no evidence, and the Chief Justice acquitted them.
It's astonishing. I just want to kind of get as clear an answer as possible here, because I can't believe this. So there's really no accountability. There's no punishment for putting people behind bars wrongfully. You can, you know, the prosecution, the police service can charge people. Prosecutions can help assist people who have been wrongfully convicted, getting them into jail. And they're not going to face any punishment for taking these people's lives away?
The closest thing to accountability that I've seen in the work that I've been doing with Innocence Canada, and I've been out of prison for almost 26 years now and volunteering with them, and I've been on their board for 15 or 16 years. I've been on the executive. I've been co-president the last five or six. I know most of the wrongly convicted people in this country. We had a case of Charles Smith, who was practicing as a pediatric forensic pathologist in Ontario. He specialized in doing baby autopsies when nobody else wanted to do them. And he became a bit of a superstar testifying in court. He was almost unassailable. Nobody wanted to challenge his opinions. He was responsible for 13 cases that we're aware of wrongful convictions. A couple of those people served 13, 12 years in difficult circumstances in prison. Ultimately, there was a public inquiry held looking into how that could happen, at the end of which Charles Smith lost his license to practice medicine. He was fined a total of, I think it was $2,650. And he lost his license to practice. He was never charged criminally, of course, and he moved to another area. He attempted to get back into the medical field, and the press actually caught up to him in Saskatchewan, and he went on then to move to the West Coast, and he's still living free. So there was a tiny fine, tiny in relation to the 13 ruined lives, he lost his license to practice medicine. You might say there was some accountability in that case, but really it was just professional, the profession closing ranks and saying this guy was never qualified in the first place. But literally there has been no accountability. In Mr. Millman and Mr. Gillespie's case, over half of the players, the original police officers, prosecutors, people that were involved are no longer alive. So you just can't go back. The other person that will never see justice in their case is the victim. George Lehman was brutally beaten and set on fire. It wasn't by Mr. Millman and Mr. Gillespie, but the St. John Police Force is not going to go back after 40 years and try and reinvestigate that case. Witnesses are no longer around. There were other viable suspects had they been properly investigated at the time, but they're not around anymore either.
So do these are victims as well, you know, the people who end up having to, you know, lose their lives in prison for crimes they didn't commit. What kind of, you know, financial settlement will there be for both of these men? What can they expect to at least receive? I mean, obviously we know that Mailman has been diagnosed with terminal cancer. He likely won't live much longer now that he's actually free. Are these men going to have any financial compensation for having their lives stripped away from them by the state?
One would like to think so, but I can tell you that over half of the wrongly convicted individuals in this country have never been compensated for what happened to them. In this particular case, the premier on Thursday past held a State of the Province address, spoke for an hour, never mentioned this case. A reporter put it to him in a scrum on the way out of that address, asked him, what about these two wrongly convicted individuals? His response was, I'm going to get some advice on that. I'll do the right thing at the end of the day. Yesterday, a Canadian press reporter put it in writing to the press secretary for the New Brunswick Attorney General, Justice Minister, and said, well, when will the end of the day be and what day will that be? Because Mr. Mailman literally doesn't have very many days left. The reporter said that they were going to do a story on the premier's response, and they got a written response from the press secretary for the justice minister in New Brunswick late in the day yesterday afternoon, and it was a one-liner saying the government has no comments on this case at this time. So the federal justice minister overturned their convictions after we worked on their case for 20 years. We undermined all of the evidence that was there. The chief justice in New Brunswick acquitted them and apologized in writing to them the following day on behalf of the courts. The justice minister, the attorney general in New Brunswick, and the premier have been silent. And their silence says a lot. The people of New Brunswick, I mean, we are the justice system, whether we like it or not. We elect and appoint these people to represent us, and we like to have a little bit of faith that they're not perfect, they're human like the rest of us, but we like to think that when they do make mistakes, especially serious ones like this, that they'll at least man up and say, it looks like we got this one wrong, we're going to do what little we can after 40 years to try and compensate these gentlemen. But I couldn't venture a guess as to whether they'll actually see anything.
That's just unbelievable. Hard to imagine.
Well, we're literally in the position of doing interviews with people like you to try and shame them into doing the right thing.
Absolutely. But
I think the people of New Brunswick, there's been several editorial letters and stuff written. They want to see these men compensated for what they've been through. People of New Brunswick are not mean-spirited. They're not cold politicians. But the reality is there may not be much political mileage in it for the premier or the justice minister to do the right thing at this point. We have seen cases, sadly, in other provinces and dangerously close in New Brunswick 10 or 12 years ago. There was an Aaron Walsh case where Mr. Walsh was also terminally ill. And at the very last moment, they gave him a small settlement so he had a little something to leave his family. But we have seen cases where they have literally outweighed the victims and allowed them to die. If Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie were still in prison and dying privately behind a stone wall someplace, there probably would be no attention given to it. The fact that this is happening in public for us all to see is creating a bit of shame. And we're still talking about this almost a month after they were formally acquitted.
No, I can't think of a better reason to shame politicians if they're not going to actually admit their clear mistakes, which they've done, but do something to remedy that and at least compensate people for ruining their lives. Now, you're all too familiar with what happened to Mailman and Gillespie, having gone through this process yourself. Can you tell our audience what happened to you and why you're so committed to battling on behalf of people who are not guilty of the crimes that they've been convicted of?
As it happens, 34 years ago, I was serving a life sentence alongside Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie in the same federal maximum security prison in northern New Brunswick. I had been convicted of a homicide back in the late 80s on the strength of a doctor's opinion that my wife had been strangled. And it turns out, of course, that she had died accidentally from choking on some cereal. And the medical misadventure was the kind term they put on it. When she went to the emergency room that evening, it was in the charge of a student doctor who had never intubated or put a breathing tube in a live patient before. He attempted it. He got it wrong. He put it into her esophagus, leading to her stomach rather than into her airway. And he sealed her fate. But he also sealed my fate. So it took 12 years from the time I was arrested until I had my conviction overturned and a retrial happened. But that's where I first met Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie. And that was two or three years before Innocence Canada was even formed. So I was doing jailhouse lawyer work for them, typing up some letters and trying to get some media attention. We were writing lawyers. We were writing politicians. We were writing private investigators and media people. The media at that time did quite a good job in identifying the problems with them. They just couldn't get anybody to listen.
Right. Well, one of the things that I know Innocence Canada highlights is the fact that if this can happen to innocent men like yourself and Robert Mailman and Walter Gillespie, it can happen to anyone, right? This is why this is such an important issue, that innocent people are being convicted of crimes they haven't done. And if we don't actually put an end to this, it can happen to anyone.
Well, I've only met you today, Harrison, but there's only you and I that are perfect. And some days, I got to confess, I'm not. I mean, we're all humans. We make mistakes. Our justice system is run by human beings, and they make mistakes. The problem is, in the cover-up and the refusal to admit the possibility that they may have made a mistake. That not only leaves people like Mr. Mailman, Mr. Gillespie, and myself imprisoned for something that they haven't done, it also allows, in Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie's case, it allows a murderer to get away with it. The St. John Police Force and the people who prosecuted Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie were probably unknowingly, but they were complicit in allowing someone to get away with the murder of George Lehman. And that's not what we expect from our justice system. We expect better. We deserve better. We can't expect perfection, but we should expect people to acknowledge that they make mistakes. And when they make mistakes, then what do you tell your kids? You know, you make a mistake, you fess up to it, and you take it on the chin, whatever your punishment is, and you try and do better next time. You learn from your mistakes. We're seeing the Premier and the Attorney General in New Brunswick at the moment repeating mistakes that have been made in other jurisdictions and in New Brunswick 40 and 50 years ago and still burying their head in the sand and ignoring it.
And I want to go back to the politician angle here. As you just said, the Premier of New Brunswick, the Attorney General, they're not trying to address this. They want to try and perhaps wait it out, as it appears they're doing. But this issue doesn't seem to be an issue that politicians at any level want to really tackle or even address. You've been in this fight advocating for this. Have you noticed the same thing, that politicians just don't really care about this fault, this obvious fault in the justice system?
We always say there's not a lot of votes in justice. Right. We're a nonprofit organization and we struggle with raising money to exist. So we're running around trying to fix the problems of the Canadian justice system and paying for the privilege of doing it. And it's tough to raise money when you say you're getting people out of prison. Not everyone understands that you're getting innocent people out of prison. So the same applies to the politicians. They don't see the political mileage in addressing these mistakes. Now, I think they're wrong to do that. I think they would be well served politically to fess up to mistakes that, if they didn't personally make them, then they're the head of a system that did. Somebody 40 years ago got this one very wrong. And for the last 40 years, they've stuck to their guns. Now that it's been demonstrated to the federal minister's satisfaction, to the chief justice's satisfaction, these men have been acquitted, they'll never go to trial again. It's time to step up to the plate and say, yes, we're not perfect, we get things wrong. Let's do what we can for this, in Mr. Mailman's case, this gentleman with a terminal cancer diagnosis, and in Mr. Gillespie's case, this 80-year-old who's living in a bed-sitting room. The sad reality is Mr. Gillespie, the day before he was acquitted, was living in a halfway house. He had a better room than what he has now. He had better food. It didn't cost him as much. And he had a part-time job there. He was going around disinfecting surfaces and doorknobs and things for COVID. And they gave him a couple hundred bucks a week for doing that. He had some walking around money. He got acquitted of a 40-year-old homicide and the next day had to move out. He no longer has a half-decent place to live. He's in a hovel, and he lost his part-time gig that he had. You know, at 80 years of age, after 40 years of mistreatment by the country, you know, we're all responsible for that. That's no way to be treating him either.
Wow, it's almost sickening to hear that. To be quite honest with you, it's just horrible. Ron, before I let you go, can you tell us a little bit about how Canadians can learn more about Innocence Canada, where they can go, and where they can go to support this group doing this important work?
Just about every Canadian these days has one of these magic devices. They don't all have my grandson's picture on them, but you only have to Google Innocence Canada. Our website is innocencecanada.com. You'll find us there, and there's histories there about cases that we're working on. We currently have over 100 cases that we're working on. 75 of those are on a 2 to 3 year wait list because we have very limited resources. And we only look at homicide cases. We only look at them after all their legal remedies have been exhausted, all their appeals. If they've gone to the provincial appeal level, they've tried to get to the Supreme Court of Canada. When all else has failed, then we start working on cases. And sometimes, as in Mr. Mailman and Mr. Gillespie's case, it's taken 20 years or more to unravel, get to the truth. And now that we've arrived at the truth, there's people still burying their head and don't want to face the truth.
Absolutely.
But look us up. We do good work. We can use all the help anyone can get, and even just talk us up, making people aware that there's somebody out there to help people in desperate straits like Mr. Melman and Mr. Gillespie is helpful. But so is talking to somebody like you who has an audience. You know, you've got a pulpit, so use it.
Yep. Well, absolutely. And we appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this. And I will have links to Innocence Canada in the description of this video, wherever you're watching it. So you can scroll down and you can access ways to interact with Innocence Canada. Ron, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.